Hey there, podcast enthusiasts. Are you ready to add a little sparkle to your day? If you're loving the insightful conversations and captivating stories on Mirror Talk Podcast, here's a friendly nudge to hit that subscribe button. By subscribing, you'll never miss out on the empowering messages and thought-provoking discussions we bring to your ears. But wait, there's more. We're all about spreading positivity and inspiration, and you can be a part of it too. How? By sharing the love with your friends and family. Share this episode with your loved ones, and let's create a ripple effect of empowerment and growth together. And hey, if you've been enjoying what you hear, why not take a moment to leave us a glowing 5-star review? Your feedback fuels our passion to keep delivering content that resonates with you. So hit that subscribe button, share the love, and leave us a review. Let's keep the conversation going and spread the Mirror Talk magic far and wide. Thanks for tuning in, and remember, your support means the world to us.
In this episode, I have the privilege of speaking with a public speaking coach, a modified yoga teacher, and a real estate agent. We'll be learning from my life's transformation journey. Welcome to the show, Catherine. How are you doing?
Good, Toby. Thank you for having me as a guest today.
Thank you so much for joining me for a soulful conversation. I'm so delighted to be speaking with you. Before we jump into the conversation, I know today we're going to be talking about something very difficult, something that could trigger a lot of people because it's something that a lot of people are going through. A lot of people are open about it, but even a lot of people are, you know, shy or scared of talking about it, and that's about, you know, suicidal thoughts. But you are a survivor, so I'd love us to learn from your story of survival. Is it possible for you to share your account of nearly taking your own life?
Yes, that's exactly why I'm here today. So it was in 1993, and it was a very, very dark time of my life. And even though I consider myself a Christian, when they say that you don't get too much that God doesn't give you and you can handle whatever God's giving you, I didn't find that to be the case. And I just found myself, really feeling depressed, but physically and emotionally, like I could feel my body. And let me see if I can just lower my screen just a little bit. So physically, in the solar plexus and the belly, I really felt a lot of pressure. And I wasn't really thinking like, oh, I have my parents, I have my brothers and sisters, that I shouldn't do this, you know. It was only like, I need this pain to end. I need this pain to end. How does that happen? And I went through maybe 6 months prior to this with almost zero sleep. And I had such bad insomnia. And it felt like some demon was trying to invade my body and trying to invade my thoughts. And so I didn't want to sleep. Because once I fell asleep, then I felt like he would enter. And I felt like he was the equivalent of something that looks like a gnarled tree. And it's digging these vines into your body. And you can feel like your cheekbones popping and, with these vines, And I called him Wooden Face because that's what his face was like, all gnarly and everything. And so I had this this real, I could say like it's almost like a temptation, but this voice inside my head was absolutely so logical to say, why don't you throw yourself in front of a moving train? Why don't you just push yourself in front of the bus right now? Oh, why don't you just, go to the box and buy a gun and tell them to load it? Go to the clerk and tell him to load it, And it really sounded quite logical. And to go back a little bit on my background. I had been a survivor of molestation from a family member. And, you know, it was like during the time that I was like 8 to 12. And it seems like my memory, like I blocked out some of that interaction. And also it happened because I trusted my relative. And it's like when you're a child, especially maybe a female, you want to please, you know, you want to please everyone. And then you, even though you say no to it, you know, he's a bully and he will say, well, I'm going to tell, you know, mom, dad, I'm going to tell so-and-so. And you are just like, you know, a bad girl. They're going to, you know, relate to you that you're bad, you know. So then in a way you find yourself trying to please, and if like, if I do this, he'll stop, but it doesn't happen like that, you know? So anyway, then when I became an adult, you know, I wasn't really dealing with all of it. I tried, I mean, I did run away when I was like 20 years old from my family, and I went to California from Boston to California and lived there, you know, and I was doing my thing. I was attempting to be an actress, and I didn't know anything about yoga. I didn't know anything about real estate at that time. And it was very challenging. But I think people who have distress in their life, I think they're very good at masking it and putting on a front saying, I'm good, I'm good. Look at me, I'm good, yeah. You know. But when I found myself in New York, I found myself like with kind of like this obsession, you know, and I wanted to feel better, but I couldn't feel better. And I wanted to succeed, but I couldn't succeed. And then when you have such trust issues, you don't have the ability to say, this guy's good, this guy's not good. This guy's good, this guy's not good. You're just like, you like them all. They're all blank, you know. They all blank, you know. And that's what you want to. That would have been a swear word right there. I don't know if you do it or not. But, you know, you try to resist, but if your boss is a male, then it's like, you know, you can't handle yourself, and you just want to say "F you, boss," you know. So then I found myself in that, and I found myself with these feelings of temptation, like, just kill yourself, the pain will stop. And during that time, I was attempting to practice my Christianity, and I was saying, okay, God, you know, help me out here, you know, Jesus, help me out here. And it felt like I wasn't getting any response. Okay, so I just felt like I didn't get any response. So during this time, it was raining a lot. It was just raining a lot, and there was no sunshine, and it just felt like this is it. And I kept having these dreams that I was being attacked or raped, or, you know, just, it was just not nice. And I had left Boston because in one way, from my parent, I felt that there was a lot of passive aggression. You know, it was just really not a very nice environment. Not that I grew up any bad. I wasn't, you know, anything. It's just that, I mean, there was eight of us. So you always had to vie for attention. And then, you know, you have parents that I feel like they had one too many children and they weren't quite paying attention to us all the time. So it was like, you know, how do you get that attention when you really need it? And how do you express yourself when you've kind of hiding, you know? So the molestation happened, and then you just kind of go into shutdown and say nothing happened, you know? And so, like, you kind of lived your life like that. And I really felt like, from a child, I felt like people could enter my mind, and if they were psychic, they could read me. So I was just like, no, and shut it down, you know? So this is how I felt, like, a lot of times growing up. But then add to that, that I was identifying as, like, a male in a female body. There was no language or no verbiage for that. And so people just said, you're a lesbian. And I'm like, nah, I don't think so, you know. And now I do identify as being a lesbian, but at that time it was just like, no, I'm a guy. Mm. You know, I'm a guy. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like when I was younger. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I said yes, I understand. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like when I was younger, you know, my brother would be wearing a suit and tie, would go to church. And then my mom would be like, look at the dress I made for all of you girls. I'm like, ew, I'm not wearing that. You know, I'm not wearing that. So then they kept trying to push this on me. And I'm like, I mean, I'm a dude. Like when I look at myself in the mirror, I'm a dude. Mm. You know what I mean? It happens to be that this female is looking back at me, but that's not me. Hmm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then everybody kept saying, oh, you're female. And then I'm like, well, I don't think so. But I felt like I was a little boy who liked little girls.
Mm.
And then that wasn't really like, you don't talk like that, and you're a girl, and you'll grow out of it. I'm like, okay, what do I know, you know? And as I grew up, it's like, I felt like there's a split in my personality. You know, it's like you have to hide who you truly are, and you have to hide what happened to you. Mm. And I'm like, you know, when people said, well, you know, your brother doesn't have to do that, or your brother does this, and he's a boy. I'm like, but I'm a boy, you know, like I shouldn't be going dressing shopping or girl shopping, you know. I wanted to wear like, you know, where are the good boots? You know, where are the good sneakers? You know, mm-hmm. And the boys had all the power. They had all the energy. So then I became a female and growing up and, you know, reached puberty and then reached 18 and 19 and 20. I'm like, oh my God, like this sucks. This kind of sucks, you know. You can't talk about who you are. And everybody's just saying, no, 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 no. But then you can't talk about what happened. So I'm like, you know, what am I going to do now? And then, like, all of this emotion got stuck in my throat, got stuck in my solar plexus, and got stuck in my belly. And so you're walking around all the time like, I'm in pain. And then this logical voice kept saying, you know what, Jesus doesn't care about you. I mean, if Jesus cared anything about you, wouldn't you just stop the pain? And I'm like, maybe that's true. Maybe that's true. So then this demon, that's all I can say, it's like, started having conversations with me, you know? And he would say, look, I care about you so much. I'm giving you an answer to end your pain. Just do this. I mean, you just do this and then that's it. Done. Like, you don't exist anymore. And then Jesus is lying to you. Like, there's no heaven. There's no place to go that has all the lush gardens. I mean, like, are you crazy? I'm the one who's here with you now, you know? So I'm like, okay. So when I was in New York in 93, I lived at a woman's residence. And I was living in a little room. And it was just a plain yellow room with one single desk and one single bed, like a twin bed. Mm. And, you know, you had the sink there. And then the voice was saying, you're on the ninth floor. Open your window real wide, take a run back, and then whoo, out the window you go. You're going to go crashing down and done. Hmm. And, you know, I looked at the window. I'm like, okay. But that wasn't, you know, like the moment I actually tried it. I mean, I pushed up the window and I pushed up the screen and, you know, I took a look down. I'm like, oh, Like, if I go crashing down there, like, I might land on someone. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm walking by. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I don't know. But the temptation felt like someone was, like, pushing you in the back, you know? Just do it. And so, like, I closed the window, closed the screen, and I was back from the door and just trying to, like, hold on, you know? Mm-hmm. During that time, I remember, like, I got down on my hands and knees. I'm like, no one can push me out the window if I'm on the ground, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I was trying to resist it, but, like, my phone was shut off. I was really dealing with financial challenges. And I didn't feel like I could have a male boss, which most of them were. And this identity thing, you know, was going on in my body, you know? Mm-hmm. So it was another night that I couldn't sleep, and it was early, like maybe, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I went upstairs to the 13th floor. And at that time, I think they changed this a little bit differently, but they had no barriers. Mm-hmm. So you could actually have this flat ledge, and I laid down on it, belly down on it. And I was like, okay. And I was holding on to the edge like this. And then this demon, wooden face, was saying, roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em. And, you know, it's like that song from the 50s here in the United States. It's called Rawhide. And it's like, roll 'em, little doggies, roll 'em. So I heard this, and it was just, you know, as I was rocking, it was like, roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em. And just like, oh, you'll be done, you know? And when I looked down there, this is 13 floors. You know, it was like very far down. Yeah. The garden, it's like a terrace garden. It was in the back of the house. So, like, you absolutely just saw the back of the house and maybe like a private little place, you know? And I started rolling off the ledge, and, you know, like, my fingers, like, I was trying to pull it up, and, you know, like, since I was laying down there, I'm just like, you know, this is like 1, 2, 3, like, let's do it, Catherine, you know, like, just 1, 2, 3, and then this voice, you know, said, like, just let go, I promise you that it'll be, you know, you won't feel anything, and then in 29 seconds, like, you're going to hit and you're not going to be existing anymore. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm starting to roll, and I'm like almost like there. And then this other voice came in and said, wait. And I was, you know, in the middle of something. And then it said, what if you go crashing down, but you hit and then you like do this bounce? But you're alive, you're alive, you're alive. It kept saying that to me. I'm like, oh, oh my God, no. Then this one was like, roll it, just roll it, just roll it. This one was saying, wait, I mean, what if you, your mouth is like whipped to the side and you're all crashed, your teeth are broken and like your eyeball socket is hanging out. Like, what if you live? Then you're going to be in the hospital. And then this one was saying, no, 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 29 seconds and you're done. Just 29 seconds and you're done. I don't know. You know, and then this one would say, like, no, but you're in the hospital and you're paralyzed and, like, no one will help you. Like, you keep looking with your eyes, like, you know, let me die, let me die. And they're going to be like, you know, no. Mm-hmm. And you won't be able to speak, and, like, your life will not be your own. Mm-hmm. And then, like, Wooden Face was saying, you know, don't listen to that. Like, I'm the one who's going to take you out of here. Like, it's just a quick time, and then your pain is done. But then the one that's screaming, wait, it kind of, like, overwhelmed the conversation a little bit, you know? Mm. I got down from the ledge, and I just sat there and cried because I didn't have the courage to do it, you know? Mm. So I don't know how long I stayed there, but I was on the roof in this little, you know, upstairs garden. And I was just like, ugh! And then I didn't want to go back downstairs because, you know, like then Wooden Face would enter my dream. So it was like, what do I do? You know? Mm. And I remember sitting there kind of like with the arms crossed and Wooden Face. I could hear him laughing like this evil, you know, thing. Mm. And it was like, ha ha. Just wait till you fall asleep. Just wait. You know? Mm. And it was terrifying. I didn't know what to do. So, like maybe, I don't know, a few days later, I was at the front desk and I was talking to a friend of mine who happened to work there. And I was standing there talking, thinking I was putting the front on and the face on, thinking that I was smiling, and her eyeballs were like, and I go, what is it? She goes, you're crying. I never saw you cry before. And I'm like, oh, I can't keep it together, you know? And I explained to her that I almost took my own life and that I feel like killing myself, you know, that it's just like this temptation that, you know, throw yourself into the front of the train. And, you know, she kind of shook her head a minute and she said, you know, please don't do that. You really mean a lot to me and it would be such an incredible loss to me if you did this. And then she said, I never shared any of this with anyone, but I'm going to tell you my own story. And I'm like, what is it? She goes, a friend of mine, I didn't even know she was in any pain. A friend of mine shot herself in the head, but it seemed like she knew that she made a mistake and she crawled to the phone and knocked off the phone and I think was able to dial 911 before she died. So meaning that she did survive, you know, a few moments after the thought, mm-hmm. after the shot, sorry. So then she kind of shared that with me and she said, you know, please don't take your own life. I mean, you really mean a lot to me. And, you know, I will be heartbroken if I didn't recognize the symptoms in you either, you know. And so I was talking to another friend and this lady actually, in a way, also saved my life because after this encounter, when I was in my room, like a couple of events happened and I started writing like automatic writing. And I kind of posed the question first to a psychologist, like in my head, and then secondly to Jesus in my head. And I started writing and I said, you know, it's too bad that I don't have the courage to end my life. And I mean, it doesn't seem like you're willing to help me. And then the auto writing said, are you seriously asking questions or are you just playing here? Because I'll answer you. Hmm. And I'm like, yeah. So then I started to like lay out this conversation. And I'm like, you know, in auto writing, I don't know if you know what automatic writing is, but just like you put the pen down and you continue to write and you don't pick it up. You just continue to write.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, well, you can't love me because, you know, I'm a bad person. I mean, I've done this and I've done that. And they're like, nope, nope. And I'm like, what do you mean nope? And they're like, let's say the voice, what I considered Jesus kept saying, I will still love you. So then I tried to test and I'm like, you can't love me. I'm a lesbian or I'm a gay or I'm, you know, in this strange body, you know, nope, I will still love you. Well, I mean, I did this and I can't get a job and, you know, like this and that. And it's like, nope, 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 nope. I will still love you. And then I'm like, okay, well, let me ask the what if. I mean, what if I'm a mass murderer? And they're like, I still love you. Hmm. Like, no matter what you do, I still love you. I'm like, that's impossible. Like, I was told that, you know, you would be like an eye for an eye and, you know, whatever I did wrong, like, you'd punish it, you know? And it's like, you were mistaught. You were mistaught. That's not me. And he goes, do you want to know how much I love you? I'm like, yeah, and I'm still writing. I'm like, of course I do. And he's like, all right, take a thought. What would you consider, like, the furthest planet away from the Earth? Or the furthest, you know, body of, you know, like, body in the sky, like Milky Way or whatever planet, whatever, as far as it away, what would be that number? I don't know. I said, like, maybe the distance would be, like, 100 million, you know, like, maybe that's what I can think that the nearest or the furthest one would be away. Mm-hmm. And he said, I love you 100 trillion million times that distance. I was like, whoa. You know, that was not in the cards. I didn't expect that, you know?
Yeah.
So that I talked to my friend Karen, and I was like, I don't know what to do. I mean, I can't get out of this thing, and I have nowhere to go but, you know. And she started studying yoga at that time, and she said, you have to come with me to yoga. And I'm like, I don't know, exercise, I don't know what that looks like. Mm. Anyway, she ended up dragging me to my first yoga class, and I hated it. And then I started to, she dragged me like day after day after day. And, you know, I was like, I don't see how this is helping, you know. But this is a Hindu-based tradition. So then my mind was like, oh, my God, Krishna, now I'm doing Hindu. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, whoa, I'm being a bad person, you know. Yeah. It was just, like, horrible. But then I, every time I went to the yoga class, I mean, first of all, I had been a runner for about 5 or 6 years, and I ran like 5 to 12 miles when I was at USC in California, and so my legs were really tight and my back was really tight. And when I was doing the yoga, I mean, I could almost not do the stretches. I'm like, oh, that's so hard, and my hamstrings were like on fire. And then she kept telling me, stay with it. But the more that I did it, the more that I started crying. And I'm like, okay, bye-bye, this doesn't feel good, like, bye-bye, you know? And you're a person that is in distress, you don't know how to get out of it, and showing your emotion, not a good deed, you know? Because, I mean, when I was growing up, you know, you're in a family of 7 siblings, it's like you started crying, like, they would mock you and ridicule you, like, till you, you know, went under the table or something, you know? I just didn't do that. So, and then, you know, mom and dad were like, no, you don't need a therapist. Like, you don't have to go. What are you? You're not crazy. Like, why would you do that? You know? So that was just not happening. But then the more that I said no to my friend, the more she was like, it's my mission. You're going to do this yoga. And I was like, no. And then I started to feel better, and then one day she said, well, I'm going to the Bahamas, and I'm going to be a yoga teacher there, and you should come with me. It's on the yoga retreat. I was just like, I can't even get my head around studying Hinduism, going to yoga. Now you want me to go to a yoga retreat? Like, is this a cult? So, you know, she ended up dragging me and arranging away for me to go to the Bahamas and be there 6 months. But this was November of 94 when I finally got there. And then, you know, those massive snowstorms in the U.S., that was like 21 massive snowstorms. And it was like, even if you wanted to, you couldn't come home, you know? So I just kept doing yoga. I just kept studying yoga. And then I kept, you know, I felt a little better. And, you know, there's a lot that we think we know. For an example, I'm this. I'm just this, you know, like that's it, flesh and bone, that's it. But then in yoga and Reiki, Reiki is like a Tibetan healing form done with laying on of hands. Like there were these modalities that you got in touch with, massage and Reiki and, you know, yoga, Tai Chi. And it started working on these little meridians, these points. And, you know, there was a couple times where I was walking down the beach. I was walking with her, and I felt like someone wound up and just punched me hard in the chest. And I was like, ah, oh, ah. Oh. And she goes, what happened? I said, I got this pain. It just seems like someone drove a hole through my chest, like this big. She goes, I know exactly what happened. I'm like, what? She goes, your heart chakra just opened.
Ooh.
I'm like, I don't even understand what you're saying, you know? I don't even understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
So it went on like that. And then I started to feel less angry. And she and the guru, you know, that's like a person who teaches and, you know, helps you develop self-development there. So he said, and she said, write a journal. And try to write down how many times you're angry. And I'm like, no problem. Angry, 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 angry. It was like filling the page. It was like, okay, 50 times today.
60 times
today. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, I'm an angry person. And then I was like, why am I such an angry person? But when you're molested, that is your first betrayal, you know? And when you're not allowed to be who you are, that's your second betrayal. It's like all of this hiding. It's like forms of betrayal. And like, I didn't even know what was happening. I was just like, you can't tell anyone. And, you know, guys are pigs. You know, that's it. And so there you started to meet yogis who were guys and not pigs. And sensitive and kind. And like, whoa, that's different. And then when I finally finished the yoga, studying there, I was like, you know what? I think I might be able to do this and be a yoga teacher. And the reason I kind of came to that conclusion is like, I don't want to push anyone. I'm very empathetic. I have all this pain. So I can kind of relate to when they're going through it, the pain, you know? And when I started to kind of do the teacher's training, there was another exercise that another guru had assigned to me, and that is meet everyone inside of you inside this private locked room. And I'm like, what does that look like and what does that mean, you know? So then I did it. It's like a energetic exercise. It's like a meditation where you kind of sit down and you say, everybody who identifies or somehow inside of me, let me know that you're there and tell me what you need from me. Right? Well, that sounds easier said than done, because when I did it, I just suddenly exposed myself. I was sitting there so calmly and I said, who's here?
Yeah.
And it was like, like 20 people, maybe your worst enemies, came into the picture. And so you're in meditation, and it feels like all of these people are inside of you. And so I was just looking at these. If I described it, it was like a white room, and it was you know, you could see all these people inside the room. There was males and there was females, and one of them was like a hostile dude, you know. He was in a black leather jacket and standing against the, you know, wall like that. And then there was, you know, boys and there was girls and there was, but besides that, there was like elements that were inside of me, you know, wooden face, not feeling good enough, extraordinarily shy and victim and, you know, depression, you know, babies, even babies were in there, like little girl Catherines and little boy Catherines, you know, everybody was in there. So the exercise was talk to everybody and say, what can I give you? What do you need? So the first one I talked to was the hostile dude, you know, let's say aggression and violence, you know. Anyway, when I approached him, remember, this is a meditation. It's not really happening. He grabbed me by the throat and was like, trying to choke the life out of me. And he was, you know, accusing me. He said, you know, you're trying to kill me. You're trying to kill me. Like that type of thing. I'm like, oh, sorry about that, you know. And that's the thing. You had to kind of meet who was there in your personality and say, I'm sorry. Can you forgive me? I didn't understand what I was doing, you know. And then there was the girl, Catherine. I actually could only hear her voice. And when I went looking for her, I was like, I found her locked in a closet.
Wow.
Crying and crying and crying, like maybe a two-year-old, a three-year-old, you know, crying and crying and crying. So I just approached her and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I mean, she was kind of going like this, like she wouldn't talk to me. But I said, why are you in here? And she said, you locked me in here. I haven't been able to get out. And then there was a little boy. He was probably like 5 or 6. And he was just like all super tough and standing there like this. And he was wounded. You know, he was emotionally wounded. And I'm like, you know, tell me about you. And he's like, I just want to be myself. All of these people in here, they keep pushing me around and they're beating me up and I just want to be myself. I'm tough, but they scare me. And I realized, you know, like this is the little boy part of me that I identified with and I couldn't be him. So in a way, he's just yelling at me, I just want to be myself. And I was like, oh my God, I'm sorry. You know, like, I'm sorry, but at that time, I couldn't take care of you. Now I can. You can be yourself. You can be whoever you want. I'm good. You know, it's okay. It's okay. So there was like not feeling good enough. There was not worthy. And you just had to keep talking to them. And you're like, as this yoga person that is studying this and doing meditation, I realized myself that this is like a split personality and it's compartmentalized. You put them all away, you know? And in attempting to survive, heal myself, I have to say, I'm going to integrate you. Is it okay? I mean, is it okay? And you're welcome. I feel a part of you. And some of these, let's say, entities or beings, whatever, they lived in my solar plexus. So as I started to identify and invite and understand who they are, it's like the vines of wood face started to be pulled apart, you know? And so all of this entanglement, it was like pulling up the vines. So like the anger was attached to fear, who's attached to worthlessness, who was attached to victim, and I want to die. And the longer that I kept doing this, and this particular exercise was not just one day. I mean, it went on and on and on. Excuse me. Until there was like kind of one day, and it wasn't even like out of the ordinary. I was just like, oh, I feel different. Oh, I really do. I feel different. And when I was writing and doing the automatic writing and looking back on who I was, I thought, oh, okay, there's a lot of hiding. There's a lot of putting a face in front of. There's trying to do it yourself and not have anyone involved in saying, I'm really hurting here. And there's a lot of betrayals here, you know? Like, I got betrayed and I lost this trust and I was a girl and I was a victim. But somehow I got responsible for it all. I got, you know, like, if you're a person who's looking to please someone, well, your manipulator or molester is using that against you and is manipulating you to his terms, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have to keep saying to yourself, hey, it's okay. I mean, it's okay. You went through that and this for a moment defined you, but you're going to be okay now. You know what I mean? We're on the way of healing. And, you know, like I've been a yoga teacher now 29 years. I'm about to retire from my teaching.
Yeah.
But that being said, it took me, you know, probably 10 years of this kind of like discussion and listening and understanding part of myself. And I remember when I was doing the writing, it's like, how can I describe this to someone? And it's like, okay, take like a really thick black marker or really black chalk on the wall and then just throw in a bunch of blood that looks like, you know, horrible kind of painting. That's what you've been looking at all this time. Mm-hmm. But if you turn a little bit, and you see the other bright wall, which has gratitude and joy, and someone saved my life on that roof. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yes, so you're looking at something, and you're just looking at the victimhood. You're not looking at all the special moments, you know?
Mm. Yeah. That's a key lesson, like, you know, looking at focusing on the positive parts of our life journey, no matter how difficult our life might be, could help us to pull through every dark stage of our lives, basically. Like being grateful for the tiniest of things actually could help us or could give us that strength that we need, you know, to just pull through and to move on. But Catherine, I have to say, I am super, super grateful for, you know, you sharing your story and being vulnerable. And I was really feeling it and feeling emotional over here listening to your journey. But I'm also delighted that, you know, we have people like you out there, because a lot of us have gotten so perfect at masking our, you know, our traumas, our feelings, our emotions. And, you know, we've gotten so good at it that we even find it very difficult to be who we truly are. And I'm so grateful that you have that strength, that courage, that boldness to really, you know, even though you went through the sad part of, you know, being molested, you have that courage to pull through that, go through, process that, fight the demons, and not listen to it, but believe that God is love and God will not want that for you. And then, you know, finding your healing and recovering from that, you know, with the journey that you went on. I really appreciate that.
Yes, thank you. And, you know, like, as I look back at my career, it's 29 years as a yoga teacher, I impacted a lot of people's lives. And I'm very sensitive to people who are suicidal. So I will stop, even total strangers, and I'm like, you okay? Can I sit with you today? Can I talk to you? And I had kind of an epiphany moment because I was talking to my nephew, and I just realized this was like about 4 years ago. I was thinking, I almost took my own life, and I didn't, and I'm an advocate for him. And you don't know that you're going to be a future advocate for somebody who could be going through like a dark time. But, you know, as a 20-year-old or 25-year-old, I mean, it's very dark, like during pandemic and everything. And to be there and kind of coach and mentor him through it, it's like, wow, you know, like that was like an epiphany.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. Yeah. You're talking about, you know, other people are suicidal. I just want to know, like, for someone out there who is listening and who is, you know, having these thoughts or, you know, suicidal actually, how would you advise them in this dark stage of their lives, like from your journey, from your story? I know you shared a lot already, and I've pinpointed like a lot of strategies or ways that one could, you know, for example, yoga, tuning into yourself, dealing with that inner child of yours, taking that time to process the trauma in you. But if there's something that someone out there is missing, what could that be? What could help that person out there?
I think that tuning in is super important, and that's done moment by moment. You know, you have to ask yourself, why am I not feeling good right now? Like, what just triggered me? Because I realized that there was a lot of triggers in my life, and, you know, judgment of other people trigger me somehow, and the perception that I'm not good enough or not worthy enough triggers me somehow. And even though that's your own identification in your brain or your mind, it's not necessarily true. So then I was kind of doing the worst case scenario that I said, okay, look, is it true that no one will miss you? You know, is it true that not one person will find you? No, there's going to be somebody. There's going to be somebody impacted by your loss, you know? And even if you can just get through this one moment, the next moment, we have this choice. If someone invites you and says, hey, you want to go to the park? Or I'll sit in my room and be quiet and, you know, look at the black wall. Go. Go and be in the park. Go and be with someone. And the other thing is, like, no one's going to say, well, how are you today? Are you feeling suicidal today? Are you good? No one's going to say that to you, Toby. But if you're not feeling well, you're going to have to say to someone, I just really feel shaky today. I don't know how I'm going to get through this day. Because that starts a conversation with someone who could say, well, what do you mean by that? You know, like a friend of mine, she said to me, I shouldn't be here. So, I mean, I had similar thoughts. So I'm like, when you say I shouldn't be here, do you mean like in this particular car or in this particular party? Or what do you mean by that? Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, in general, I don't think I should be here. So, like, when someone is trying to reach out for help, you can use cues like that. And I think it's important to tune into yourself and say, I'm not feeling well. And then try to figure out those triggers. And if you can't, I mean, talk to someone. If you can't talk to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, talk to someone who kind of has your best interest.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I've gotten to appreciate therapists, and, you know, maybe from the journey of this podcast, speaking with a lot of therapists and coaches, you know, earlier I always believe, oh, like your parents, actually. When you talk about that, I was like a little bit laughing because, you know, I had this mindset that, oh, black people don't have problems that are so big that you have to go see a therapist. A lot of people, not only black people, other people have that same mindset as, What can be my issue that I will go and see a therapist? Well, you know, I've tried to get out of that mindset, and I've gotten to that point where, they are very vital. They are very important. Coaches, mentors, therapists, they are all vital and useful for our growth, for processing our emotions, our traumas, our feelings, whatever that we might be going through that we need help with. We can't do life alone. We need some professional hands sometimes to help us on this journey also.
Yes, and you know, like because I had this stigma about therapists, and I was a pleasing personality, right? When I went to therapy, it didn't work for me because the therapist would say, tell me what you want, and I'd be like, what do you want to hear? Yeah. She goes, no, just tell me anything. I'm like, but tell me what you want to hear.
Yeah, how can I satisfy you, therapist?
Exactly. Yeah. So, wait, it didn't work for me because I was just like, you know, I can't tell you anything, but, you know, if you ask me for something, I will tell you, you know?
How are you able to let go of that people-pleasing syndrome, if I may ask?
So the people-pleasing, in a lot of regards, it's still alive and well. And I've just had to manage it. So I know that I have that in my personality, in my heart. And not being listened to can be a red flag for me. It's like I am trying to please them. They're not listening to me, but I really need to say this, you know? Mm-hmm. So at some times you just have to say, well, you know, it's my intention to be liked by you. But at this point, I really need to say something to stand up for myself, and you may not like it.
Yeah. Just being bold and saying, yeah, I have to just express myself this way. And I know I care so much about how you feel, and I really want you to be happy around me, but I just have to take a step of boldness to say what I truly feel with this, in this condition, in this situation right now.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, growing up in sibling groups and everything, they got a lot of judgment. They got a lot of judgment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like recently, I mean, my parents died like maybe 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. When I told my parents that I felt suicidal and that a relative had molested me, they're like, don't tell anyone. Don't mm-hmm. tell your siblings, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but it happened to me. It's my truth. And it's like, meh. Just keep it to yourself. So I went to the yoga and I came back and they still had that. So I kind of honored them. Mm. After they died, I said, okay, now I'm going to tell my story. Because, you know, I was thinking naively that if I'm acting weird in my family because of the trauma that happened to me, I will share with my family and they will understand the weirdness, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
But when I told them, they just said, you're a liar. You know, you're a liar. And I don't know why you're bad-mouthing him, you know. And so at that time, you know, this was actually my older brother. He said it happened. And so, like, my sister had been talking to me, and she said, it's, you know, he said it happened like this. And I'm like, excuse me. But he said it happened.
That's true. Wait, so can you please give me a minute? I have to answer it, though. I'll be right back. Just one minute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. I'm coming. Oh, I'm so sorry for that.
That's okay. So then I, you know, had I told him that, and it was around Thanksgiving, and my sister said, "I'm sorry, but we have to uninvite you to Thanksgiving because you make us feel uncomfortable." Mm.
Wow. So that must have been very difficult for you, though. Like, you know, being molested and your family, you know. Would I say ignoring that or not believing that? How are you able to then process that and go through that whole phase of your life of being labeled a liar, basically?
Right. So, you know, believe it or not, this has occurred many, many times, not only just for me, but, you know, other women, other males who have been molested or raped. There's a lot of casualness and, you know, you must be a liar and this never happened and you make things up. And, you know, if you kind of look at the statistics, there's quite a lot of these types of facts, including that, you know, young ladies who report a rape, a lot of times law enforcement officials try to discount their story to say that they made it up and they're liars. And so what ends up happening is they actually get arrested for falsifying a police report. And even though it did happen to them, you know, they get coerced into saying it didn't happen to them. And so this is like a typical response, unfortunately. So for me, I was mature enough at that point to say, I'm just one of the many. You know, I'm just one of the many. Mm-hmm. So it's happening to young women all over the world, and it's happening to young males as well. And there's this idea like, oh, you must have made it up because you want to tell someone a story. Like, you know, it's the same thing when you share with people that you're a lesbian, and they just kind of say, well, you're just making it up. You know, you just want attention. I'm like, no one wants that kind of attention. Believe me. They wish they were straight. They wish.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just try to take it like with that kind of maturity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm asking myself, is there something we could do as individuals, as parents, as a society, as friends to change this? I know, of course, there are a lot of people out there who are going through this, and there are a lot of people that misuse this kind of situation, you know, to maybe label someone badly or to, you know, do something bad. But there are people that have truly gone through this, molestation like you did, who really suffer from this and have to be silenced. Is there a way we could get the truth and also create a supportive community for people that are going through this kind of trauma?
So, I mean, I also just want to clarify this as well. I mean, my story is one of molestation, but at the age of 12, my brother decided to give me to an older friend, and he said, you know, be his girlfriend, and that friend raped me. So like at 12, I had an out-of-body experience, like, you know, that I wasn't present in my body. And this also became kind of the disconnect. And I, my sister Jennifer then had like a change of heart, and she called me, or she wrote me a letter. I think she wrote me a letter. And she said, you know, I've been really kind of bad to you, and I'm sorry for that. And I'm sorry that I didn't believe you. And I said, you know, your fallback, the first fallback that you have is that you don't believe. That you don't believe that there will be a piece of truth to it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Why don't we start with that premise that there could be a truth to it? Even if it's my truth. Mm-hmm. Start with that. Don't just discount them and say you're making up a story, because in the worst event of your life, why would you lie about something like that to get someone else in trouble? And, you know, if you're a gay or a lesbian, like, you've been hiding your whole life, because a lot of times in a lot of places, it's not accepted. So why would we put ourselves in that way to have everyone ridicule us and in order to live an open and honest life? We wouldn't if it wasn't true. So I said, you know, why don't you start with the premise that there is some truth to it?
Why don't you start from a point that it could be some sweet, and then go from there in supporting the person and helping the person on his or her journey, and see how it goes from there.
And so silencing. Like, exactly. Don't silence them, and don't try to read into their story. You know, like, they need you to listen to them. One of the reasons that I became a public speaker and I want to share my story is because I want to tell my story. And when people say, when they hear that I want to be a public speaker, they're like, they don't even let me finish. They say, oh, because you want to help someone. Oh, because you want to, you know, inspire someone. I'm like, no, I literally want to tell my own truth.
And I would like to ask a question to that, actually, also, because I know on this journey of recording Mirror Talk, Soulful Conversations. I've met a lot of people who, you know, want to share their stories also. And I'm so opportunity to be speaking with you because you're a public speaker. Is there a way that we could share our story, our personal story, our personal journey with the world in a very effective way, in a very impactful way? Are there like some strategies to that, some ways, some technique to that, basically?
First of all, you want to choose a person, like a really deep, dear friend. And if you're saying something with humor or saying something with punchline and maybe a little bit of drama, you know your friend, and you're going to set it up in such a way that they're going to lean in and say, Toby, what happened? Toby, what happened? You know? And then all of a sudden you deliver the punchline and it's like, you know, they're going to start laughing, right? Yeah. So if you kind of had that thought in your mind, if a funny story happened to you, how would you set it up? How would you not drop the nuggets until it was just the right moment and you're like, boom, okay? So after you make the introduction to yourself and you have this funny story, like our conversations are storytelling,
yes.
Okay?
Yes.
So it's like when you are talking about a time that you could laugh at yourself, tell me what that looks like. And then you would say, oh my God, I got a good one for you. Wait for it. So that's the same thing in like public speaking. Yes. And it's the same thing like when you have a very dramatic tale. Let's say that something scared you. Mm. You know, how are you going to set it up so the person is going to be like, shit! So you're trying to lay the same kind of gems and foundations, and in just this manner, like you're speaking to 1,500 people or one person, you're going to do the same kind of setting this up, right? But also, when you're talking to a friend, you're not going to be talking like this and saying, okay, let me tell you the story. She's going to tell you the story now. You know, you're going to be like, oh my God, I'm going to tell you what happened.
Yeah.
You're going to use your body language. You might make this emotion. It's the same kind of principle because think about it as like moments of a theater production. You know, when you're in that moment, if you're seeing it for the first time, like, I remember when I went to the movies and I saw Friday the 13th for the first time. And that's a horror movie, if you don't know what that was. But I remember that after it was all over and they were in the scene with the lake and it was in the rowboat interview, but it was quiet. We sat back like that and then all of a sudden the hand came out, you know? And we were like, so it's the same type of timing.
Oh, that is timing matters, and you know, laying the foundation is very, very important. You know, just create the tension, the suspense, the intense there, and then boom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know that. I mean, when we communicate in little stories, but we also communicate with a natural rhythm. And if I miss the word, I'm like, oh, what is the word? What is the word I'm trying to say? You could fill it in for me. But as a speaker, you could have that same moment where you freeze a little bit and then you're just like, oh, hold on a moment. I'm having a brain freeze. I mean, what's to say you can't say that? You can say it. Because in communication with people from other countries, other cultures, from our own, and if we miss a word, I mean, I'm a yoga teacher and I'm like, okay, move your right, I mean, your left arm. We do that all the time.
Yes, that's true. Oh, yeah. I believe that's... Oh, wow. That's cool. I don't know. I just feel like asking you more questions in regards to molestation and the people in distress, because I was really touched by your story and I've learned how to share my story. And also anyone who asks me about, you know, how can I share my story? I know what to tell them from what you just, you know, told me right now, Catherine.
Exactly. And, you know, like I went from a part of me that was very hidden. to like, this is my truth. And yes. it happened to me and it defined me in a way. You know what I mean? Because who it created in me was I'm strong. I'm empathetic. I am compassionate. But if all this didn't happen to me, I might have been an a-hole. You know what I mean? And so that I have this trauma that happened to me, I am relatable. You know, I am relatable. So so what came out of it for me is courage, because you had gone from a place of being hiding to say, well, it happened. And then even though people say to me, well, that's a lie, I'm like, I mean, in your opinion, it's a lie. I know what happened. And then to owning it, you know, like you go from a place when you're in a victim mode to saying everybody else did this. I'm bad because everybody else did this. I'm in the worst case because everybody did this. I'm blaming everybody else. But if your life is not working, Toby, you have to say right here, I'm not working. I'm not. So it's like, what can I do to make that happen, you know?
Yeah.
So I got to get, like, full ownership. Stop blaming. Stop blaming. It happened how many years ago now? Stop blaming. And then what I say to myself, and I think that if you're dealing with distress or suicide, taking it one day at a time and one moment at a time, just saying, you know what? I can do this right now. And find those things that you can accomplish. You know, like you get overwhelmed by the whole big picture. Well, what can you do? Can you make 5 phone calls? Can you talk to a few people? You know, like even to share your story, like I'm reaching out to you, you got to reach out to someone and say, would you be interested? Would you be interested? And share those stories. I mean, share those moments. So like you write a bio and then you're saying, hey, this is me. Would you be interested in that presentation? A lot of them will say, yeah, that sounds great. You know, because they're looking for content, one. And secondly, they might have a budget where you get some of that budget because they need to dispense the budget for events or learning. And if you're talking to like a corporation or something about suicide, it's like, I'm sure that they have people in their company that just don't feel good.
That's true. That's very true. Wow. Thank you so much, Catherine. I really appreciate this. For people out there who, for example, want to get into public speaking, to share their stories, or even want to learn about yoga, because I know in your journey of recovery and healing, yoga really helped a lot, did a lot of wonder for you, opening up your heart chakra and all of that, and, you know, helping you to reconnect with that little girl that was locked up in the box, and the boy that, you know, felt he was pushed around, basically helping you to reconnect to every part of yourself. For people who would love to maybe ask you more questions about these, ask more questions about how to speak, share their stories, how to communicate, even with loved ones around them that, you know, are distressed, what's the best way to reach out to you, to contact you and to work with you?
Well, I have a website, and that's great@publicspeakinginc.com. And then, you know, my email is great@publicspeaking@gmail.com. And, you know, just kind of contact me and say hello. And I think that, you know, it's not as scary as it is in our mind here. But that's also something that we have to say, I can do this, you know, and I can do this. And especially like, when you have someone who's empathetic or sympathetic, you know, maybe it's a person like myself who's not going to push you and say, oh my God, you should get over that now. I mean, people have different ways of recovery. People have different ways of dealing with grief. I mean, there's so many things that could trigger a distressed person. I mean, you lose your mother and you could be distressed enough to take your life. But you know, as you have seen recently, I mean, celebrities and actors and, you know, these really look famous-looking people, they look like they have everything, and they take their own life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's no look to say this person is distressed and suicidal.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. Yeah. The person has to open up, and we also, as loved ones, also could be alert and to look for the signs, look out for the signs or signals that the person might be hiding or giving at the same time.
Yeah. I think that's, one of the cases. But you have to be, open to ask them questions, because they're never going to say, I need something.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Maybe a dialogue could be like, hey, sometimes I get down and sometimes I don't feel like I have a good day. I was hoping that maybe we could be like a little bit of accountability partners or partners, just like if I say, hey, look, can we have a conversation? I mean, would you be open to that? And then would you do the same? That way it's kind of giving them the option, like, hey, remember what you said about that you weren't feeling well? Like, I think I kind of feel like that. Then they have a place to start from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very good. That's a very wonderful tip. Yeah. Be open to them, ask questions, and just be open to hear from them and listen to them also. Yeah.
As a person, I'm just turning 61. I'll be 61 in June, or 62, right? Mm-hmm. Your life is not over, and so all of that stuff happened to me almost 30 years ago, and you might be very surprised at what you can still accomplish. And, after 50, I became a successful real estate investor. So I bought a 4-family and I bought a 2-family here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so, what does that look like for me? It's like, that is like a success and a milestone that I never, would have imagined for myself. Mm-hmm. And yet I kept at it. Mm-hmm. And, I have acquired, like, that's the equivalent $1.2 million worth of property. Wow. And I spent, out of my own money, approximately $12,000. And how I did that is, like, I leveraged other people's money. So I met like a partner who assisted me in the down payment of the multifamily. I applied for like hard money loans. So it's like for about $12,000, which cost me like the title, the appraisal, the insurance. I get into two multifamily properties, Mm-hmm. So that would have been, the story in my mind would have been like, you don't have any money, you don't have any contacts. I mean, how are you going to do it? I mean, you've been trying for 20 years. Like, what are you going to do?
Mm.
But when you're cleared enough and it clicks, it clicks.
Yes.
So if you're struggling and you even like you're not suicidal, but you just lost your job, or your family's been impacted by a hurricane or a tornado, you're going to get through this. And there are like times that are really extremely difficult. And you have to think that if you go to the ocean, the water goes in and out, in and out. And so sometimes it feels like the worst devastation of your life, and then you recover. And then it goes in, and then you recover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Wow. Catherine, I've learned a lot from you in this conversation. Like, this has been so blessing, eye-opening. And I really appreciate you on this podcast. Thank you so much for sharing so much with us. Thank you so much for giving us those words of hope, those words of encouragement, and also sharing your journey, which is also helping other people out there to, let go or process or to deal with, overcome their suicidal thoughts also. Thank you so much, Katrina. I appreciate this. It was wonderful.
Thank you, Toby. I really appreciate being able to share and, with some vulnerability here today and, out of a space of respect and compassion. I mean, this is wonderful also that you have opened your space and heart to individuals like myself. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.